On today's show, the cost of borrowing money to go to college just got cheaper. We'll fill you in and walk you through the details. Plus, the Fed hasn't cut interest rates yet, but that hasn't stopped a prominent bank from cutting what they pay their savings account customers. That and so much more coming up on this edition of Money with Friends. Welcome to Money with Friends. I'm Bobby Rebel, host of the Financial Grown Up Podcast, coming to you from my very grown up kitchen in New York City.
And I'm Tara Falcone, coming to you from my office space in Princeton, New Jersey.
This is a show where we take two headlines from the financial press. We use them as a foundation to share money insights and specific ways we can all get better with our money. We wrap it all up at the end with one big idea to set us all up for success. And most of all, Tara, we do it with our friends. Not only do we have our regular money friend co-host like Tara that bring fresh perspectives to the podcast, the show is taped live in front of a Facebook audience. Their comments are part of the show as well. And we also have a few extra surprises along the way from our friends. For more information on how to be part of the audience, you can see our schedule at moneywithfriendspodcast.com. That's moneywithfriendspodcast.com. This episode of Money with Friends is sponsored by Tiller, your financial life in a spreadsheet automatically updated each day. Go to stackingbenjamins.com/Tiller for a free trial and to support the show. Hey, Tara.
Hey, Bobby. How are you?
Good. Happy summer. We are taping this just before the July 4th weekend, but it will come out actually right after.
Yeah. So I hope, you know, proactively, that you had a wonderful 4th.
Yes. I'm going to say I had an amazing 4th of July. It was so restful and relaxing and I'm just going to say it was beautiful weather because we just
know. And the fireworks were spectacular.
Amazing, phenomenal fireworks that we saw this year. You've been doing a little Marie Kondo action in your home.
Yeah. So my husband and I will be moving. Thank you, Navy, here in about a month. And so we went through all of our clothing today, item by item, you know, asking, does this spark joy or not? And we filled up like 4 different trash bags of stuff that we no longer need. It's amazing.
My goodness. But don't you feel good?
I do. It makes me feel much like kind of lighter, as though I'm like releasing things from my past and, you know, making space for abundance, as I like to say.
Yes, absolutely. Kind of like the weight off your shoulder if your student loans got cheaper, right?
Yeah, I mean, that would be a huge weight off your shoulder if your student loans got cheaper.
Definitely. We're going to talk about that in one sec after we hear from one of our money friends. Who is it today?
Good morning. You supply the coffee. We'll bring the headlines. Here they come.
All right, let's get to the headline. And this one comes from Reuters from my friend Beth Pinsker. It is titled, New U.S. Loan Rates Make It Cheaper to Borrow for College. Let's begin. The cost of borrowing money for college in the United States just got a little bit cheaper. The federal government lowered interest rates for student loans starting July 1st. New rates for direct undergraduate loans are 4.53%. That is down from 5.05%. So half a percentage point. Mm-hmm. Graduate direct unsubsidized loans are now 6.08%, down from 6.6%, and parent plus loans are 7.08%, down from 7.6%. Those are actually pretty big drops.
Those are 50 bip drops. Those are pretty substantial.
They are pretty substantial, and they're already in effect. Let's read a little bit more of the piece, and then we're going to talk about it. The average undergraduate will save $199 in borrowing costs during the next academic year, according to calculations by Credible.com, a marketplace for private student lenders. In aggregate, with graduate and parent loans, that amounts to $3 billion in overall interest savings. Now, here is the catch. You ready? This rate cut will not affect the estimated $1.6 trillion already owed in student debt because the changed rates only apply to new loans. Okay. All this will come, by the way, as news to many students who take up federal loans, even though it was announced months ago. So that's a note. Pay attention to the news, my friends. When families call financial aid expert Mark Kantrowitz for help, they often do not know their loan balance, service, or interest rate. So that's an interesting point in the story, that people are borrowing money and they don't even know how much they are borrowing. And part of the reason is this part of the story. Federal student loans do not come with the same kind of disclosure documents as mortgages, which detail the interest rate, monthly payments, and applicable rules for repayment. They do not even have the same rules as private student loans, which are required to provide rate disclosures. This is interesting. And then it goes on to say, myth busting. One risk of the lower rates is that students will think they can borrow more, but this could lead to risky borrowing. According to Kantrowitz, who we heard from before, this is just 1 year's loans. Regardless of the interest rates, you are still paying back principal. Another risk is that students may be tempted to refinance prior loans, especially if they see aggressively advertised low rates in the private market. Even those private student loans, say federal student loans are usually a better deal for undergraduate students because they are more consumer protections and income-based repayment options along with no co-signing requirements. Let's just talk about that and maybe we'll read a little bit more. What do you think, Tara?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting. There's a lot going on in the interest rate market right now with the Fed kind of trying to, use some of the tools in their toolbox, as they say, to play with the economy and, in this late cycle of the bull market. And so, I think it's really important, obviously, that people are paying attention to this because it could save them some money on this year's loans. But as they mentioned, it doesn't affect the people that have already, taken out the $1.6 trillion worth of student loan debt that we currently have here in this country.
Right. And it does point out that if you refinance with a private loan company, you may get a better loan than you have. You may, but you really need to run the numbers because very often if you're in a federal loan, that still is often better. Not just the rate, there's other things that matter besides the interest rate that you have. It also has to do with protections, meaning your liability can be very different. The way that they can come after you is very different. And federal loans, and you know more about this than I do, Tara, but federal loans are often eligible for different kinds of programs that can alleviate the pressure.
Yeah, so they're often eligible depending on the area of the economy that you work in. If you work for a not-for-profit or in the public sector somewhere, you may be eligible for public student loan forgiveness if you meet very strict criteria. You may also be eligible for different income-based repayment programs that if you were to refinance those federal loans would then not be available to you. The way that I like to say it is that if you are planning to pay your student loans back in sort of the standard 10-year repayment plan and it could just save you some money by refinancing and you don't need those extra protections afforded to you with a federal loan, then refinancing might keep some more money in your pocket and it might be the best choice for you then. But you really have to weigh kind of what your plan is.
The article goes on to give an example. It talks about Duke University. Duke University recently had a study that showed that students who take the time to think about how much they are borrowing and what it is used for ended up taking thousands less in loans. Duke is now in its second year of issuing a spring debt letter to each student, which details their loans and gives a ballpark estimate of what monthly payments will be after graduation. Quote, the first time we sent it out, we got two phone calls within the hour from concerned students, said Irene Jasper, Duke's director for the Office of Student Loans and Personal Finance. That was pretty cool. So when you see exactly the number that you're going to pay when you graduate, I think that can make a huge difference, is basically the point of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that Duke is sending out this letter because I think one of the things that I hear from students and recent grads is that they were kind of oblivious to how much they had actually borrowed for their education until they started getting those servicing letters, after they graduated. And so sometimes just that sticker shock of, seeing your balance basically, midway through each year is a bit of a reality check for you about how much you are borrowing and the fact that you will have to pay that back after you graduate.
Right, because when you borrow other kinds of loans, for example, a mortgage, and I think even with credit cards, they'll say something like, if you only pay the minimum for this many years, it will take you this long to pay it off. It's my understanding they're not getting that when they take out these loans. And they may take out loans for things that are discretionary, maybe getting, whether it's a new computer when they could do with the old one, or maybe they need a car, or maybe living expenses that may be a little bit more flexible than if they really understood that they were living on borrowed money.
Yeah, absolutely. Another one of the things I hear from students all the time is that they, once the student loan amount is dispersed to their school and then goes to pay for their tuition, room and board, sometimes they'll get a refund check, which is for the extra amount that they've borrowed that isn't actually going towards those fixed expenses. And in a lot of cases, they don't really need that money to live off of. If they were to get maybe a part-time job or have a side hustle or, you know, making some money in other ways, they can actually not have to borrow that money and then not have to pay it back in the future. So there are other ways of bridging that gap than just that refund check.
Yeah, I think it's interesting they call it a refund check because it's not a refund. It's
not a refund. Loan. No, it is.
Yeah, I really wish it were set up that they borrowed the amount they needed and then they had to actively do something to access sort of the slush fund cash, because I don't know that that's communicated well.
Schools are trying to do some interesting things with that. Typically, they will give that entire amount of the refund check at the very beginning of the semester. And now some of them are making it so that they're sort of allotting bits of it every month throughout that semester, sort of pacing somebody, putting them on kind of a mandatory budget, if you will, for that refund amount.
All right, let's do our takeaways. What's your takeaway here, Tara?
My takeaway is that you need to know the all-in cost of what you're borrowing and your rights and protections as a borrower. So don't just look at the headline number, but also understand how much you're going to pay in interest. And if you can reduce that amount and still maintain the protections and protections and rights that you need, then definitely do that. Save yourself some money.
My takeaway is that this is how paying attention pays off, because I think that a lot of us are oblivious to these kinds of changes. And if you know about these changes, that's the way that you can pay attention to them and take advantage of them. One of the things that was amazing is, you know, the Duke example, people aren't paying attention. They don't realize how much they're borrowing. Even earlier in the article, they talk about the fact that this is a change that had been, it's taking effect July 1st. So it just took effect. But the reality is this was announced months ago, and I'm shocked that this was not more widely talked about, because it's a huge deal for so many people that these rates have gone down by about 0.5%. And this is, by the way, before the Fed has done any cutting recently. They're holding. We think the Fed is going to cut. But the fact that these loans rates are lower already, people should know that. So I'm surprised it hasn't gotten more coverage. Before we fully wrap up, I want to just add in one audience comment. For those of you who listen to the audio podcast version of this, we do tape in front of a live Facebook audience. You can join us. The information is on our website at moneywithfriendspodcast.com. It is the Stacking Benjamins Facebook page, and we take audience comments. So join us and maybe you will get a shout out or your comment read. Like, we are about to read Ron's comment. He says, quote, "Very strict guidelines on student loan forgiveness, quite an understatement." Yeah, it is. You have to really, if you want to get student loan forgiveness, you do have to make sure that you follow the requirements to a T and check on it frequently, because I think a lot of people thought they were putting in the time to do it and then they find out into the process that something wasn't correct.
Yes, and then their you know, timeline or their ticker kind of resets, and you know, all of a sudden that 10-year timeline resets and you have to start over again, and it can be a huge mess, which is why I often tell people not to rely on forgiveness and plan on having to pay back your loans yourself.
Yes. But also, if there is a forgiveness program available to you, research it and be super careful. Read every bit of fine print. Have as many opinions, as many people helping you as possible. Check that you're doing everything correctly and go for it too. Because there's nothing, if it works for you, you should go for it.
But definitely. If it's available really and careful. You qualify, absolutely. But don't necessarily rely on it for sure.
It's really hard to qualify. But worth it if you do.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to toss it to you, Ms. Tara.
Alrighty, so we're going to talk about headline number two, which is from Business Insider. And it says, Goldman Sachs Marcus is lowering their interest rates on its savings account for the first time as Wall Street prepares for a potential Fed rate cut. And so it says, customers flock to Goldman Sachs digital bank Marcus because of its super high interest rates or savings rates. Now the bank is pulling back in preparation for a potential rate cut by the Fed. Goldman told Marcus customers last Thursday that it would be dropping rates from 2.25% to 2.15% or 0.1%. So for every $1,000 invested in a Marcus account, this change will cost a customer only about $1 a year in interest. And it goes on to say that Marcus' interest rate cut was preempted by competitor Ally, which announced a rate cut from 2.2% to 2.1% last Tuesday. This is the first time that either bank has cut interest rates since launching. And at the time of writing, no other high yield accounts have cut their interest rates thus far. The move comes after the Fed decided not to cut interest rates last month, but hinted that rate cuts will come later this month. CME's FedWatch has rated the likelihood of a rate cut as 100%. They think it's extremely likely. But by preemptively lowering their rates now, Ally and Marcus are protecting their profits in advance of when the Fed's rates likely fall. According to a statement provided by Goldman's spokesperson, the cut was a result of quote unquote market conditions. And it says our online savings account remains more than four times the national average, meaning the interest rate that is offered, the spokesman or spokesperson said. So I find this very fascinating because interest rates are, is kind of the topic of both of these articles right now. But what I think is interesting on this side of it is that while the interest rate lowering might help you on the loan side, it can sort of hurt you on the savings side. Bobby, what are your thoughts?
I was surprised that they did this before the Fed because I don't like the way that it looks. I understand that to an individual consumer, it's not going to cost that much, but I do feel it's a slippery slope. I don't like the tone of it. And I wonder why they would do this and risk the goodwill that they have created by offering higher rates than their competitors. I know that they're not really first. This is their first time lowering rates. They are not first. However, I do feel that these new internet banks have set themselves apart because they have higher rates. And I wonder, are they inching towards getting closer to the traditional banks and just why they would do this before the Fed?
I think David Carlson, who's in our audience right now, has a great point and is exactly what I was going to say. He says, no reason to cut rates ahead of time, in my opinion, hurts consumers, helps banks bottom line. Exactly. So I think one of the interesting things is that you have to understand how interest rates and banks and the Fed are all sort of connected and how that affects how much they're able to give you when you deposit money with them. And so in this case, if the amount that they're being charged to borrow and loan money is the same because the Fed hasn't actually change rates yet, but they're then giving you less, that means that their profit, at least in the interim, is going to be higher. And so right now that's keeping their profit, you know, at a larger place where maybe they're sort of preemptively trying to offset any future, you know, potential losses or squeezes of their interest spread.
Right. But why the timing, I guess, is what bothers me. I can understand that if their costs go up because the Fed is cutting rates, so therefore they can't make as much, that would make sense, but this is happening ahead of time. And I wonder what will happen because a lot of their customers are younger and may not have the stickiness that a traditional bank customer has. So for example, I've now been banking with my bank that I'm not going to name for quite some time, and I'm not happy with them. But because I'm so entrenched in them, it's very difficult for me to switch. I probably will switch soon, but it is much more difficult. A lot of the customers, because these companies are relatively new, certainly Marcus is relatively new, are not that tied to them. A lot of them are younger and may not be as sticky. So it's an interesting risk that they are taking in potentially alienating some customers. That said, as we know, they might not pay attention. They may not notice.
That's absolutely true. And I think I've seen in a number of personal finance, like Facebook groups, for example, recently of, you know, customers being very upset that this is happening, even though it is a relatively small percentage, you know, posting like, oh, you know, Marcus cut my rate. What is going on? I'm going to call them tomorrow and find out. Again, that comes from a bit of financial illiteracy and not really understanding how interest rate in the Feds and things are related. But, you know, I think that a lot of these banks are banking on loyalty that simply does not exist with the younger generation. And I think they're going to see a lot of people flocking very quickly to another provider.
It reminds me of a lot of startups that had this sort of freemium model where they had a lot of features available in an app, like a lot of these fintech apps where they were free and people came to expect that. And then when they started charging, often a very small amount, a very reasonable amount, frankly, mm-hmm. people just did not want to pay and they lost their customers because they had trained these customers and lured them in with these rates. And then at the end of the day, they changed it and people did not stick the way that older generations sort of were sticky. It's almost like cutting the cord. I mean, people, we still have cable. We're old. We still have cable. But I'm telling you, my kids are just indifferent. They don't even understand why you would have cable. They don't even know why we have TVs. They're just busy on their phones and sometimes a computer screen, sometimes an iPad. But so these companies, they assume people will stick. And maybe they will. Maybe they will because maybe, especially once the Fed, assuming the Fed does cut rates, maybe everyone will cut rates. But I don't think that this did a lot for their customers, if their customers are aware. And that also is an if.
I agree. I think that a lot of these high yield savings accounts are going to have to start figuring out ways of differentiating their product offering aside from the rate that they're able to offer, because that's the one that gets a lot of the, you know, sexy media attention. Meanwhile, a lot of the, you know, restrictions and feasibility and versatility of that account can be very much, you know, the same, you know, from Ally to Marcus to, you know, other accounts. And so they're going to have to find other ways of pleasing their customers if it's not going to be having the absolute highest interest rate available.
We have a little bit of a counterpoint from one of our viewers, and that is Ron. He says savings by Americans is so low that lowering interest rates will hardly be felt. Sadly, that may be true. But I think that it's not that they would feel the $1 on average that the average customer will be paying. I think it's almost like those nuisance fees that you get when you are, you know, if your bank balance goes too low, if you're late to pay a bill and they're charging you $10, it's more the principle of it that it seems a little bit petty why they're going in and cutting rates rather than the actual, because the actual dollar amount truthfully probably is not significant, but they made the rate significant when they used that and continue to use it because it is still a better rate than most banks that are brick and mortar. It is still, we should point that out. Their rates, both there and Ally, are still probably in almost every case better than what you get in a brick and mortar bank. They are using that to draw in business. They're using that to highlight why you should be a customer. That differentiator really kind of needs to be maintained if that's what they're going to hang their hat on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of young people think that they've sort of been tricked or that this is like a smoke and mirrors, dog and pony show of some sorts where they were lured in by this very high interest rate. And now it's getting cut and they're like, hey, well, hang on, you're not holding up your end of the bargain here. What's going on? So we'll see.
And our viewer, David, is agreeing that banks are very similar and it is very tough to differentiate. So yes, pretty much we agree with you. Tara, what are your takeaways here?
So my takeaway here is that you need to understand how the Fed's moves may affect your, or potential moves may affect your financial life. And also just understand how banks make money. I think a lot of people have this idea that when they deposit money at a bank, that it's then put into like some coffer with their name on it and nobody ever touches it.
Wait,
that's not how this works. No, Bobby,
no, that's not what happens.
You're a CFP. You should know this. This is not how this works. No, your money is then loaned out to other people, other banks, you know, a lot of times in multiples of the amount that you actually put in. There's a bit of regulation with regard to that. But yeah, your money isn't just sitting there, it's being loaned out. And so basically, banks are trying to make a spread on the amount they're charged to borrow and the amount that they can pay or amount that they earn to lend. And so as that starts getting squeezed, you start getting squeezed too.
Very well explained. We'll do a whole education thing one of these days of how
sure.
How all that works, the whole system. But yeah, but usually a lot of banks don't change their rates until the Fed changes rates, but they are not necessarily always in sync. And you see that with the yield curve, the things do move around, not always in the most logical way. My takeaway is that this is not the best optics, but in the end, it will not cost consumers that much. It may cost the banks consumers though.
Yeah, I love it.
All right, before we get to the big idea, we want to talk about our sponsor because Money with Friends is brought to you by Tiller. Tiller allows you to manage your money 10 times faster in a spreadsheet. It is the only service that connects your banks to Google Sheets and Excel with your daily spending, transactions, and balances. And Tara, unlike financial apps that force you to compromise, spreadsheets are fully customizable to your needs. Tiller makes them even better with an automatic daily feed of your spending, balances, and transaction. Tiller eliminates data entry, multiple account logins, and CSV files. Simply connect your banks once to see transactions automatically updated each day. Basically, you set it up once and you never have to do anything again, which we love in the finance space because that's the best way to get things done. I mean, if you automate your retirement, anything, bill paying, it's almost always a good thing. Go to stackingbenjamins.com/tiller for more info and a free trial. Again, it's stackingbenjamins.com/tiller. And a reminder, that is the Stacking Benjamins website because Money with Friends is part of the Stacking Benjamins family of podcasts. If you want to learn more about this podcast while we're on this subject, you can go to moneywithfriendspodcast.com where you can get more details about Tara and all of her ventures along with the other seven. We have eight total Money Friend regular co-hosts that join Joe and I as guest co-hosts on a rotating basis over a 4-month period. Kind of like a season, Tara, right?
Yeah, I'm rocking the summer season of this Money with Friends podcast.
Yeah. By the way, our socials, we also have brand new socials if you guys want to check them out on Instagram at Money Friends Pod, and it is the same at Money Friends Pod on Twitter. We are just getting going, so please support us by joining those social media channels. We will stay on this Facebook page, the Stacking Benjamins Facebook page at iStack Benjamins, because again, we love being part of the Stacking Benjamins family. And with that, it is time for, drumroll, the big idea. All right, my friend Tara, I'm going to put you on the spot. You're going first.
Oh boy. All right. So my big idea is that you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't possibly, because of the way the banks work, you can't possibly want to have really low interest rates when you need to borrow money, but then be expecting really high interest rates on money that you're putting into savings. So again, understanding how all of this stuff works and can either enable you or disable you or help or hurt you from an interest rate perspective is super important. Can't have your cake and eat it too. What about you, Bobby? What's your big idea?
That, first of all, that was really profound. And yet,
and yet
very accessible with a cake metaphor.
Yes, I love using cake as a metaphor for lots of things in finance, equity specifically, but that's another show.
Yes. Well, you have a really good, we haven't really talked about your YouTube channel. Maybe we'll talk about that in a sec, but your YouTube channel has a lot of good metaphors like that. Everyone should check out Tara's YouTube. All right, here's my big idea. Just as there are two sides to every trade, expected lower rates can be both good and bad. Marcus was not the first and will not be the last bank, I'm betting, not guaranteed, to lower what it pays its customers. And lower rates will take a bite out of many people's income, especially retirees. But on the upside, if you have debt or need to take out debt for school, for example, the lower rates seem to be trickling down, and that can be a huge benefit. Seeing both sides keeps us all in balance.
Quite profound as well. I love the balance aspect of your big idea, Bobby.
I know, but it doesn't hold a candle to cake.
I mean, not much holds a candle to cake. Let's be real.
Nothing better than cake. All right. Thanks so much to everyone, especially our live Facebook audience. For more information about the show, as I mentioned, you can go to our website at moneywithfriendspodcast.com. We'll see you guys later. Go be grownups.
Bye.
This show is created and hosted by Josal Sihai and Bobby Rebel and is a joint venture of BRK Media LLC and Stacking Benjamins LLC, copyright 2019. Our engineer is Caden Thompson. And for a list of our friends who appear on the podcast, head to our website, moneywithfriendspodcast.com. You can also check out our schedule for upcoming recording sessions so you can join us and be part of the show. As with anything, remember you shouldn't take advice from any of us or any other video or podcast without first talking to your financial advisor, and that the people in this episode are here for your and their entertainment purposes only. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and we'll see you back here next time with a real episode of Money with Friends.